South Africa.
Shout out to Carl Word.
It's the ever so cool Euphonic.
Yo, this is Will Clark.
What's up? This is your boy Shimza.
This is Caster from Crazy White Boy.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is James Deacon, and you're listening to After Hours with Kyle Wood.
As if we're not happy to have Kyle back.
Hey, what up, everybody? It's Jay Something, and you're listening to After Hours with my brother Kyle Wood.
Welcome to Season 3, Episode 2. This is After Hours Africa. Today we are joined by a very special guest, very special episode this one. We are chatting to Adrian Conradi, better known as Aiden K. He's a DJ, producer, industry creative professional within the entertainment space. And with that said, now, even more so, a documentary director. We are going to be discussing his latest documentary and first documentary, which has taken the media by storm, taken the internet by storm, and taken fans of multiple artists, performers, DJs, bands by storm. This conversation goes a little deeper than what is generally out there on public domain. There is no BCCSA for us to really give a fuck about. And we take on this conversation in a different manner. Multiple points about mental health and how it has affected artists, because that has always been a big factor for me in this podcast, is to always bring up how the person I'm speaking to is doing. That's all it takes, is saying, hey there. So, without any further delay, up next, this is After Hours, Season 3, Episode 2, featuring Aiden K. Firstly, dude, I took my hat to you for putting this together, creating awareness on such a, as your slogan said, such a forgotten industry, such a forgotten part of the economy, and has been blatantly ignored. So let's get that straight. Before we dive in head first to everything and everything about state of the arts, how are you doing?
You know, I think a lot of what has happened over the last couple of months has happened for a reason. I think I've always felt a specific calling to trying to help other people, whether it's been to help them in a way of supporting them by giving them feedback on their music or trying to offer them some kind of support in advice and what they should do. I think that is really the case of, at the moment, just trying to survive more than anything else. It's unfortunate that it's gotten to the point where as things open up and as things get some kind of momentum going, we're shut down again. So it got to the beginning of this year where I thought to myself, I don't have it in me again to go through what I went through last year of trying to release music under the circumstances that we're in. It's an integral part of being an artist and being able to, like, people will say, okay, well, yeah, you should be home. You should have a lot of time to make music, but it's, that's valid. But what, how do you make music for people that aren't hearing your music?
Yeah.
On top of the fact that there aren't any gigs for people to hear your music being played at, there's so much noise online and on social media that you can't actually break through that with trying to promote your stuff. So I made the decision that this year was pretty much going to be a gap year for me when it came to making music. I've done some like mixing projects and given people feedback and helped them out where I can. But for me, this year isn't about carrying on trying to make music, because it's too devastating being a creative. I mean, last year I released more music than I've ever released, had more success with it than I've ever had before. But for me, it felt more like a failure than any of the previous years, because there was just nobody to hear it, because it was completely drowned out by the noise and negativity that you find online.
Did you say that the listenership picked up, but you found that it wasn't necessarily being heard in the way that it should have, outside of obviously being clubs, but, and we, like, we won't even mention radio, but in terms of the streams, you say you released that much music, it was getting the most plays that you had, but referring to the fact that it probably wasn't being listened to, considering the fact that there was all this other noise that was going on.
Well, I mean, that's correct. I mean, if I just had to look at my Spotify numbers, they almost, I would say last year, they tripled from what they were the year before. But I think without that feedback of being able to interact with people, to see how your music is received live, it's very daunting and very, it's a very cold and alone place. And I think with house music, especially, it's always been about unity. And I think when you can't actually be around other people, I think a lot of artists, especially in our space and the people that thrive off of nightlife entertainment,
yeah,
it's been a very dark and lonely place for the last couple of months. And there's been no respite from that.
After seeing the documentary, as well as the build-up to it, you know, it's not even necessary to ask what the motivation was behind putting that together. I think it was a matter of time for somebody to do it, but it took a special kind of person to put something like this together. And I say that because anybody will generally go, okay, well, what was the motivation? That's a fucking stupid question, because for the past, what, year and a half, that this whole industry and this whole space has been ignored. And I'd rather look at the fact that how the space was for you in terms of taking on that opportunity, being at the epicenter of it, being part of that industry directly. And then at the same time, you're experiencing, hearing stories from friends, colleagues, and musicians that are your peers at the same time. So, I mean, how did that take a toll on you, where you were putting all of this together, but at the same time experiencing it? You weren't shooting a wildlife documentary where it doesn't really concern you. You know, you're shooting a documentary of which you're a part of, very much so. And at the same time, this is where I said earlier, like, I take my hat off to you, because you're putting something together that directly involves you, your peers around you, artists that are being open about what's been going on. I mean, what was the feeling like being at the heart of it? It's like somebody directing their own autobiography.
Yeah, all writing their own obituary. I think in reality, what really resonated with me the most was hearing stories of people that I, in fact, have idolized for so many years, mm-hmm. going through the same struggles that I've gone through. And I think what I really struggled with last year was feeling almost like there was this mounting pressure to be super productive. And it was something that I started to have conversations with people around me about, where there was, in the first 3 weeks of lockdown and the extension and carrying on into the several months that we were completely restricted from working, I think there was this poll online where people were saying, okay, well, you need to be productive in this time, and look at what I'm doing. And as a creative, you're going, well, what if I don't feel as creative? What if I don't feel as motivated? Am I a failure? And I started feeling like, okay, I was going to be left behind when things returned. And all of us, I think there was the pessimistic few that felt, okay, well, this will only return in 2 years' time or 3 years' time. And a lot of us thought, well, that's not realistic. We'll be back by December, or even back by September.
Yeah.
And we had this hope, but what ended up happening was I felt like, okay, when things get back to normal, I'm going to be left behind, because I don't feel motivated. I don't feel like I want to sit in my studio by myself and carry on making music, put all of this energy into it, put all of this money into it, and then it doesn't get heard. And I'm not able to play it live. I'm not able to see the rewards.
And
of
you
this
don't
effort.
Need further isolation sitting in a studio alone. Because you don't have that.
This is the other thing, is
that escape to go and play it to people and road test what you're doing.
Yeah. And I mean, it's something for me. It's like as somebody that's quite introverted, to go from almost lamenting the idea of having to be out every weekend. And obviously there was the times that I was tour managing with Timo and I would be out with him every weekend. But what ended up happening was when gigs started to sort of return, and there was one, let's say like one every 2 weeks or once a month, it was like, I was almost excited to just be, hey, cool, I get to see people again. It's not like I'm in this limbo of just sitting in this room for weeks on end without any kind of interaction with other people.
Yeah.
And hearing people's stories in doing this, and obviously speaking to people like Al Watson, who I feel like for me is somebody that's really taken the initiative over the years to really push boundaries and try and like grow his brand to a point where we can all be proud of what he's done, to say that he almost feels like he's questioning what's the point in making music at the moment, or feeling unmotivated to make music. And that's somebody that makes, like, he releases more music than all of us. But it was almost unreal to hear him say that and to think, well, okay, well, if somebody like that, who I felt was like, I mean, he had songs coming out the whole year last year, for somebody like him to say that, I felt a little, it was bittersweet, let's say, because I felt, okay, this is something that I can relate to, although under the circumstances, it's pretty shit to basically only be able to relate to him on this level. Yeah. And the story about Dean and his wife was tragic. The hearing about Leah, and I think we all, I've gotten quite a lot of comments on it so far, and people have said, well, look, why did you only speak to people who are established? And my motivation for that was, well, if the people who you think are doing great and the people who you assume are actually okay and things are back to normal for them, because they might have a few gigs and you don't, but in reality they're struggling, you don't then feel so hopeless. You feel like, okay, well, if the people that I believed were to be okay aren't actually okay, and who I would assume have all of their shit together don't, then me being an up-and-coming artist, I can't beat myself up that, oh, well, these people are just going to, now all of a sudden they're going to be light years ahead of me.
Anybody that does necessarily bring that up and go like, okay, cool, well, you've only spoken to established people, I'm glad that you brought it up that way to say like, listen, the fact of the matter is, if it's affecting somebody like this, anybody that looks up to these artists can feel that sense of relief in a sense, you know, like not that there's much relief in any sense over this period, but sense some sort of, okay, cool, I'm not alone. If these guys are struggling, then I guess it's pretty much normal that this is the case at the moment. And going back to the actual documentary with speaking to all these artists, you know, there were, as you mentioned, Dean's story, Leah's story. I mean, these were some seriously like breaking news moments for the industry and for artists alike. You know, when you sent it to me before you actually released, that was when I texted you. I'm like, oh my God, you know, never mind the fact that this whole industry has taken such a turn, come to a complete halt. Other people forget that anybody that's in the public eye or is an artist, they forget that they have a normal life as well. And everything else that anybody else in their normal life of, if they have a 9-to-5 and they have normal shit that they deal with, people like this have that plus this major burden of now no longer a livelihood and social career for that matter.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, if I have to sort of analyze this from a perspective of somebody that might watch this and think, well, not have watched this, and they look at the project from the outside and think, well, it's irresponsible to be making a documentary about people complaining that they don't get to go to parties while we're in the midst of a pandemic. The whole objective of this is to bring the human element into it and say, well, yes, in a world where you're trying to mitigate risk, it does not seem conducive to be experimenting with allowing people to gather or even taking any initiative to make sure that we can find some way to operate safely. You are more concerned with completely shutting down this industry so that there is no risk involved at all. But in doing so and in advocating for these things, it's usually the people that haven't been that directly affected by it. I almost implore those people to go and watch this and look and see that the people that you are basically advocating against actually are humans. They're people that suffer the same way you do when you feel lost. Yes, they might not have, we're not talking necessarily, and thank God, we're not talking about the loss of loved ones, but we're talking about the loss of financial stability, of financial certainty, of the ability to pursue something that many of them have dedicated their entire lives to pursuing. That is in effect still a loss. And a lot of us mourn the lives that we used to live before all of this. So you, by sort of showboating and grandstanding and saying, well, it's irresponsible and you need to be more careful because we're going back to level 5, all you're doing is just hurting these people more. And I've experienced it. I've had moments over the course of the last year where I'll go onto Twitter or I'll go onto Facebook and somebody will be commenting, oh, it's so irresponsible to see young people going out. And I'm like, okay, well, what do you want them to do?
Yeah.
How much longer, how much more can they get? Yes. Okay. We're going through the third wave at the moment. probably irresponsible to be going out having large gatherings at the moment. But when we're allowed to have gatherings, you then still complain that people are going out. So yeah. We need to find some way of being able to establish what is allowed and what isn't, and what we can do to support the people that are most affected by this.
And this brings me to your well-barred answer on ENCA this morning. And just for the record, like I said earlier, there's no BCCSA to really give a fuck about. And if After Hours gets taken down with this, then fucking awesome. But I believe the question was somewhere along the lines of like, how fair do you think the industry is being treated when there are government gatherings and church gatherings where club, entertainment, any mass restaurant gatherings aren't allowed? Before I let you get to that, my opinion on that, the stay home, stay safe bullshit motto applies to every aspect of day-to-day living and entertainment, yet to anything government related and anything religion related. That stay home, stay safe little slogan of South Africa hasn't stuck by those two organizations.
Look, I think there's three groups of people that I've observed in this. They are the people that are stay home, stay safe advocates who truly mean it, who they don't leave the house, they order their groceries online, they isolate. And if those people are more comfortable staying at home, then by all means, you have the right to do that. I think the biggest irony is those people that are in the middle, those people that advocate for it, but then will still go and meet their friends at Tasha's. They'll still go out to this friend's braai or this kid's birthday party and still have gatherings. Yes, they're not meet. I don't know why it would be any different if one person has it at a family braai and you're in close contact with each other versus somebody at an open air festival.
Yeah.
There's so much data coming out to suggest that potentially, well, this maybe doesn't get that transmitted easily in full sunlight. But nobody, and this is what I'm saying, nobody's prepared to look at this because we have approached this with the initiative that we are minimizing cost or minimizing risk at any means necessary. We're going to completely try and cut out as much as we can. But as you pointed out, the irony is then you are allowing church gatherings to happen or political gatherings to happen. I will say though, and I said that in the ENCA interview as well, this isn't a uniquely South African problem. For whatever reason, our industry around the world was targeted as the soul spreading, what word do we use? Accelerator, super spreader, whatever word you, whatever way you want to describe this in your vocabulary, we were targeted. And if you look at what's happening in the UK, the irony is that the day that this documentary came out was the day they were meant to open up their nightlife. All restrictions were meant to fall away.
Yeah.
And they were told, sorry, that can't happen. We have to delay it further. While having cricket matches, tennis matches, all fully attended by supporters. So that's okay. You're prepared to take that risk, but you're not prepared to allow our industry. And you saw people that were quite conservative in the beginning in the entertainment industry that were advocating for lockdown, even now going, well, we've paid this price. We've had this, we've made this sacrifice, but where does it stop? Where do we actually get the chance to return to work? And it's almost like we're sitting here in South Africa at the moment going, well, we have no idea when we're going to get back to work. We're hoping that at some point this will basically just disappear, because that's the best hope that we have.
Yeah.
For our industry, the best hope we have is that by divine intervention, this goes away and we can just go back to normal, because it doesn't seem like, even when it comes to vaccinating the population, that our industry is the first to be taken away as soon as there's any kind of spike in case numbers, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, completely. I mean, the poor guys over at G&G were the ones that made the ballot of where you think you could have got COVID from. And that was a direct dig on, as you said, super spreader accelerator events.
Yeah.
Restaurant family gatherings. And then, let's just throw in and name drop a Rage Festival, for God's sake. You know, so, I mean, in a sense, and I'm not sure what the feedback has been on your side with the artists direct off camera, but in a sense, do you think it's somewhat being targeted maliciously
I think it's just a case of we're an easy target. I think if you have to look at Raid as an example, obviously you're going to point the finger at the however many thousand kids were down there, not social distancing, having interactions with each other, which most of the interactions happened outside of the actual festival. But you will target them rather than looking at the thousands of events that happened around the country over the same period where the same behavior was taking place. Exactly. It's just an easy target. And obviously the thing is, and this is something that you've seen, you can see all across the world, the more you test, the more you're going to find it. If it's present, the more you do, the more tests you do. So you're now saying to these kids, well, you've now been in contact. So of course their parents all send them for tests, and of course they all test positive. But that doesn't mean them were sick. Most of them were probably walking around asymptomatic.
Yeah.
But the same thing could be said about most of the people that were going out at that period that were 25, 35, going to this bar or going to watch sport here with some mates or having a braai. If you don't feel sick, you don't get tested.
Mm, yeah, exactly.
Unless you come into contact with somebody, you're not going to get tested. But now you're saying this. So of course, it's an easy target for people, and they were thrown under the bus, and I feel unfairly so, because they did everything that they could to basically control how things were done and managed on their side.
Yeah.
You can't control people and their free will. And I think we're getting to the point now where you see people complaining about lockdown fatigue and saying that we're tired of having to live under these restrictions. And I think equally so, people are tired of being told what to do by people online, especially.
Of course.
And that's dangerous because, as I said, at a time like now where people should be trying to be as cautious as possible, they're not, because we're just tired of this constant reminder by people that are trying to put you down that, no, you're being irresponsible. You can't do that, or you can't do this. And I think we're getting to that point where people are just, if I get it, I get it.
Yeah.
And that's really irresponsible if the cases are at the point they are at now.
You and I have always briefly discussed, I mean, we've known each other for quite some time. We've always discussed it very briefly, but it's always been a big part of anybody that I interview or chat to since the start of the radio career Touch HD in 2017. And then at the beginning of After Hours in particular, which has been going on now for over a year, because that started in lockdown too. And that point being is discussing how all of this, never mind prior to COVID, because there was always an effect on people's mental health prior to COVID, especially those in the entertainment industry. But now even more so about how that I find is there are symptoms around mental health that are the last to be recognized just from the fact that people are being isolated, being stuck at home, being completely alone. And that's affecting so many more people on such a way more serious manner than anything else, because at the same time, nobody actually takes it seriously or dives into the discussion of it. And that's what drew me to, State of the Arts. And when you put that together, where you focus on mental health, and that was what I said to you prior to this, to seeing you now, was having this conversation a bit more in depth than what you've been able to, because the effect that it has, how it's affected artists prior to COVID, there was a mental health line that was always crossed by never being home, by being isolated in a hotel room, then being surrounded by thousands of people, then going back to studio, being isolated, and then going back to thousands of people, and going from this A to B, opposite ends of the scale, that alone affected people. Now it's 100% on the other side, where, like you said earlier, everybody's like, okay, well, you must have so much more time. You must be so creative. You must be making so much more music. No, overall, with the artists that you discussed off camera, they discussed depression, and it was all seldom want to discuss these sort of things. But did you find that over knowing these artists for the period that you've known them, their overall demeanor had changed?
100%. And I think if I have to look at how they've sort of embraced the project, I think the fact that we have all experienced this level of uncertainty, of feeling despondent, of feeling hopeless, it's something that if not every artist, the majority of them can relate to, when your livelihood is taken away without you having a say in it, your mental health is undoubtedly going to suffer. There was all these statistics that I tried to look at in putting this together, and I tried to find some kind of evidence as to the increase in suicide. And the data does not suggest that there has been an increase of suicide since the beginning of lockdown. And people almost say, okay, well, then we've made this big deal out of nothing. Mm. We have made this big deal about mental health or about anxiety and depression about nothing. But just because somebody doesn't go through with it doesn't mean they aren't suffering. And I think this is where people make the mistake of, okay, well, if we can't see that you're suffering, you can't be suffering. If you're not breaking down and crying all the time or completely flipping your mur and trying to swear at everyone, then surely you must be okay.
Mm.
But it raises a bigger question of, well, what is depression then? And I think when you have to look at the general sentiment of people, and I quoted a study that was done by an organization in the UK called Help Musicians, and they made mention of the people that they surveyed of the, I think it was 700 people, 87% felt their mental health deteriorated.
Mm.
Of the 400 people that responded to the poll that I put out, 90% of the people said that their mental health had suffered. And that was obviously more South African specific. What I feel we need to talk more about, and this isn't something that either of us are experts in.
Sure, sure.
Potentially the evidence will begin to suggest it moving forward, is that, and the last couple of months have been a perfect case study for this, is depression has always been pointed to a chemical imbalance in the brain or a lack of serotonin. But there's something to be said about the fact that 90% of people all of a sudden had a chemical imbalance in their brain and suddenly feel depressed. What we really have to realize is that there's more to it than we understand. And when you take away people's, for us, it was taking away our ability to earn a living. It was taking away our purpose. A lot of us dedicated years to this. A lot of us dedicated money, financial investment, creating businesses, foregoing formal education to pursue this dream.
Mm.
There's been nothing to replace that since the start of this. For general people, I would imagine it's a case of the interaction with their family, being able to go and visit your loved ones without concern of passing it on to them. I genuinely feel like people don't quite understand what it's like to suffer from something that makes you feel that getting out of bed in the morning isn't worth it. And when you couple that with the financial strain that this industry has been put under, you look at the people, especially the people that I've spoken to, or the creators that are in the public eye, they are meant to be a source of comfort to many, because by creating the music, maybe not so much electronic music, I don't imagine many people listen to our music when they're sad, but I imagine there are some people that are great songwriters that suffer from it too. They are there to comfort people in the time when they need them the most. Yet in the time that we've needed people the most, we have felt the most alone and the most isolated. And that's really been something that's always played in the back of my mind. And it's something that has sort of come to life over the last couple of months. And it's quite saddening to bear witness to.
You don't have to disclose names, but I'm curious, was there anything post recording artists that was cut from the documentary?
So the idea behind it was that I was going to, the first cut that I did was about 40 minutes long, and I really had to try and condense it even further. I got a friend of mine to help me edit it even further.
Mm.
And in having to be quite as heavy-handed as I was, I made the decision that all the conversations will be released in their full form, because the stories need to be heard. There was nothing that had to be cut out that people shouldn't hear. I have received feedback since putting it out that I probably should have focused on having a more diverse representation of the whole South African industry. And I think that's something that I'm prepared to own, because I chose to speak to people that I that are sort of in my immediate circle. And the stories that they have to tell relate to people across the board. And those people's stories are also valid, but it's difficult when you have this, it's not a long form conversation like this where you can have 20 guests and you can speak to them for an hour. I have 5 minutes at most to feature one person talking. I can't speak to everyone. And in choosing to then find somebody else, whose story do I then not tell?
No matter what you did, there's always going to be some sort of backlash. And you know what I mean? Well, in my opinion, and you can take it as you will, the fact that they have the energy to speak up about and criticize something, good. You struck a chord with them to a point that they've watched it and gone, okay, well, why wasn't this done? Which in turn kind of opens up for you to do a volume two, episode two, or a follow-up on some sort.
Well, that's exactly the plan. I think there's the thing that really I didn't take into consideration was how this has also affected people who are in theater, who are people like comedians, who also relied on being able to go and perform to a theater of 100 people or 500 people or 2,000 people, 10,000 people. Yes, our industry is by many means the most affected by lockdown restrictions, more so than tourism, more so than theater, because you can still have a small theater and people will still be able to pay certain ticket prices for that because the expectations there, they're happy to do so because it's something they do once a month or once every couple of months. But for our industry, where essentially most events are happening on such a small profit margin, you can't now take away, because it's not a case of taking away 50% of the occupancy of the venue in most cases, because if you have to look at something like Altitude Beach, the venue can hold 2,000 people, but they're restricted to following the outdoor guideline. How is that sustainable? If you have a look at, I was in preparing for some of these interviews, I had a look at like, what are other countries doing to support the arts and to support culture and nightlife specifically? I can only dream about the day that the South African government actually acknowledges nightlife entertainment in this country. The only time they fucking did was when Master KG was on TV in some fucking European country performing a song that anybody in this country goes, okay, well, let's look, this is a DJ, this, and Black Coffee. And when they get out of the country, then we give them recognition. But nobody recognizes the fact that this culture in our country, I mean, for most people, house music is pop music for them. Yeah. They listen, they eat, sleep, and breathe this stuff. But this industry has been let down to the extent that this specific niche, this niche that relies on nightclubs, that relies on events happening past 10 o'clock at night or 11 o'clock at night, is suffering. And they've tried to adapt, and there's been all of these ways of trying to mitigate the impact that the lockdown restrictions have had on the events. But for instance, Germany not only created funding for the cultural venues, what they started doing was incentivizing venues that were prepared to have events at small scale, so 100 people. They were offering them subsidies to put on these events to make them profitable, so those venues didn't close, because they recognize that nightclubs, especially in Berlin, of such cultural significance to the country and to tourism, that, well, how do we keep these places alive?
Yeah.
And that's a very stark contrast to what's happening in this country, where nightclubs are closing, venues are closing. I genuinely don't know what we go back to after all of this is said and done. I don't know what our industry looks like. And all I can hope is that the people that don't fall by the wayside are then supported when things return.